I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the arrival, at a professional level, in Indianapolis of perhaps the world's most popular sport. We're going to talk about professional soccer making its way to the Hoosier State. We're going to talk about the Indy 11. My guests will be Team President and General Manager Peter Wilt, Marketing and Operations Vice President Tom Dunmore, and Chrissy Edgington, Vice President of Marketing, U.S. Sports Advisors. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about soccer today, about the arrival of the Indy 11. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is No Limits WFYI. My guests are Peter Wilt, who is the team president and GM, Tom Dunmore, who is the team vice president of marketing and operations, and Chrissy Edgington, who's the vice president of marketing for U.S. Sports Advisors. Welcome all.
Thank you, John.
It's good to have you all here. Well, I think we'll start just by asking, you know, why now? I mean, soccer obviously has been a presence here in the Indiana landscape for quite a while, at the college level and at the youth level, but it's been a little slow in getting here at the professional level. What made this the moment? Peter, I'll start with you, but I'm going to give everybody a crack at this.
I think that's a great distinction, John, the difference between spectatorship and participation. Yeah. Because soccer has made it decades ago, frankly, from a participant sport. The World Cup.
Yeah, already had the cliche of the soccer mom 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, the World Cup in 94 for the men and the 99 Women's World Cup really accelerated the participation level of soccer in the U.S. But the spectator boom has been a very recent phenomenon, really over the last 5 or 10 years, manifested in Major League Soccer, first in the Pacific Northwest. Seattle Sounders of Major League Soccer average over 44,000 fans a game. Portland Timbers sell out every game. Vancouver, albeit in Canada, sells out every game. That has recently transitioned in mid-America. So now Salt Lake City sells out every game, 20,000 plus. Kansas City sells out every game at 20,000. And these are in soccer-specific stadia that is a key to the revolution of the sport from a spectator standpoint. Also in ethnic enclaves like Los Angeles, San Antonio in the North American Soccer League, where they have record attendances. And I'll let Tom, being the marketing expert, talk a little bit about maybe the reasons behind that.
Sure. And I think beyond the spectator growth of the sport, it's also the growth of real evangelists for the sport at the grassroots level. Fans that are taking their free time to help build soccer in cities across America, from Portland to Salt Lake to Indianapolis. It really got going here a couple of years ago, almost 3 years ago now, when just a group of fans called the Brickyard Battalion got together and decided they wanted a pro soccer team too. They saw what was going on in Kansas City and in other cities across the U.S. where stadiums were starting to sell out, and they wanted that in Indy. And instead of waiting for someone to just come along and do it, they got together, they started Facebook groups, Twitter, they created logos, they created scarves, they created a kind of an imaginary team to support while they waited and advocated for somebody to invest to make that a reality, which happened with Ursal's investment in what ultimately became Indy 11. But it was only with that grassroots advocacy, which didn't exist 10 years ago, that Indy 11 was able to come to be.
And Chrissy, it sounds like this was and some of this is observational on my part. My wife's family is from the East Coast, and we'd spend a lot of time out there, and I'd noticed particularly when the World Cup was going on, there'd be huge viewing parties there, which is not a phenomenon I was used to here in the Midwest. Is it one of those things that had to move its way in from the coast to get here to the heartland?
Yeah, I think, you know, we see in major markets like New York or L.A., you know, certain movements are adopted much faster than they tend to be here in the Midwest. But with the millennials really kind of embracing this sport as their own, you know, we're seeing such an active and dense population of millennials here in Indianapolis particularly. And so I think that, you know, to your original question, that we're really primed, the time is now, because, you know, that group of sports fans are really taking hold, and we have a strong population of that here. So, yeah, I think that the kind of the trickle down from the East or West Coast has been a little bit gradual, but it's definitely kind of made its way here now. And
I think there's some certain media that has caused that. And it's the accessibility to the sport, the international sport, that's made it possible. In the last 5 years, it's become much easier to watch international soccer on television and online, and also not to be underestimated is the effect of EA Sports FIFA video game, because these video games have the actual players from Europe on them, and young adults are playing it almost incessantly in some cases, and it gets the sport ingrained in them. And there are more European, this is an amazing stat, there are more European soccer games available on television in the United States than in Europe. Part of that is because of blackout rules in Europe. Part of it is that United States is so diverse that you have fans of every league, whether it's La Liga in Spain, Serie A in Italy, the Dutch League, Bundesliga, or the English Premier League, all looking for their fix of soccer. And that translates, as Tom said, to local audiences wanting a team of their own. They may be passionate about Arsenal or Liverpool, but they want to have their local team that they can emotionally connect with.
We are talking about the arrival of pro soccer, the Indy 11, here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. Well, take me through the process then of how you start what sounds like is a pretty major pro sports franchise from scratch here in a place that really doesn't have a history for supporting at the professional level sports teams like that. I'm going to let everybody have a crack at that one.
We're very fortunate to have the key ingredients. And as Tom mentioned, the Brickyard Battalion having the potential, you know, I'll use an ugly brand term, the consumers, the potential consumers, the fans themselves, having that. There's a void in the sports landscape in Indianapolis, fans of soccer, and that's the young adults and millennials that Chrissy mentioned. It's an ethnic audience, a large ethnic audience, and a large youth soccer population. Indianapolis is the fourth highest youth soccer on a ratio basis market in the country. So you have that. The basic fans are there. But you also have to have the investor with the vision and the capital to make it happen. And in Ersal Ozdemir, you have an immigrant who brought to this country from his native Turkey a passion for the sport, and he has an amazing vision, and I call it an ability to see around corners. He's able to see where the sport is going, and he was on this early on when the United States was a candidate for the World Cup in 2018 or 2022, he served on the advisory board to get the games in Indianapolis if the United States received the games, which unfortunately it didn't. But that experience really showed him that Indianapolis is ready for a team. He brought me in about 2 years ago, and we did the due diligence to see if indeed the market could support it. I quickly brought Tom on to do the marketing for it and the grassroots galvanizing that. And I'll let you talk about that, but that grassroots galvanizing was a key to making this work.
Yeah, before we get, how large an enterprise, at least, how much do you have to invest to get something like this
off
the ground?
It's a seven-figure investment before you open the doors. So it is significant, not only getting the organization going, but the venue. We're going to play at Carroll Stadium on the campus of IUPUI. It's not even a soccer stadium. It's a track stadium that's being retrofitted for soccer. The facilities, the field itself is the nicest level of synthetic there is, but the game is, the players prefer playing the game on grass.
Mm-hmm. There's like been baseball players that way.
Well, yeah. Sure. Yeah, the ball actually rolls in this sport on the surface, so you want it to be natural. The locker rooms and some of the other amenities are not up to the standards that we would like for our athletes and for the fans. So we're investing further to bring those up to NASL standards.
And if people want to, you know, to buy tickets or to get closer to the game, Tom, how do they go about doing that?
They can visit indy11.com. That's 11 spelled out, of course, or call the office at 317-685-1100. We have a very, very small number of tickets left for our opening home game on April 12th at Carroll Stadium. That one will sell out. Mm-hmm. And the other games are selling out very quickly, too. So,
What is a sellout? How many people?
Around 11,000.
So 11,000 people are going to show up for the first game. And how many home games are there?
We have 14 regular season home games. We also have a warm-up exhibition game against IU on April 4th, and we'll have a couple of additional exhibition and Open Cup tournament games scheduled as well.
Real quickly, a logistical question. Where is the parking? Where I've got an idea where are you gonna put the people, where are you gonna put their cars?
Sure, we're very fortunate that IUPUI have been tremendous partners in allowing us to play at Carroll Stadium and upgrade the facility there. As Peter said, we're making a number of investments to fit 11,000 people in there, bringing in almost 5,000 seats and building suites, and a part of that is also having game day parking for our fans. So we will have four surface parking lots across the street from Carroll Stadium across New York Street, and it's actually a fantastic setup. We'll be allowing tailgating in all those lots. They'll open up 3 hours before kickoff, so it'll be a fun, festive atmosphere, and the general parking starts at $8 for our season ticket holders and $10 for the general public.
And I've noticed the motif of 11 here. How did the Indy 11 get their name, Tom?
That's a question I've only been asked probably about 1,011 times.
or 11,000 times.
Over the last year. We did a pretty thorough process leading into the naming. A lot of fan input, you know, throughout the early stages from Peter being the first guy putting this team together operationally. You know, he was reaching out to fans to get their feedback on what they wanted. You know, what does the community want their team to be built around identity-wise? And we felt from the feedback and our own experience in the sport that, you know, particularly the millennial crowd, you know, as Chrissy mentioned, that's a huge part of the sport's growth here. They didn't want a kind of minor league baseball cheesy name and logo and, a mascot imagery to it. So instead we wanted something, you know, rooted in the city, both with the name and the logo of the team, which I think is just as important because the visual side of it is so significant. So, you know, we ran a fan survey. We got thousands of fans who commented. And the general theme was something that connected to Indiana's rich heritage, particularly its history of honoring the military. Mm-hmm. And when Peter and I were searching for a name, we visited the World War Memorial downtown and mm-hmm. talked with some of the staff there. And we talked to the collections manager, Donna Schmink. We were talking about the Civil War, and obviously the Civil War Monument was something that's so significant for Indianapolis, Monument Circle. And we'd been considering already using Lady Victory from the monument as a motif in our logo. And she mentioned, what about the 11th Regiment from the Civil War? They were the first to muster for Indiana. They were led by Lew Wallace, a famous son of Indiana. And that gives you a tie.
Author of Ben-Hur.
Author of Ben-Hur, a best-selling book of the 19th century. And I don't think she was a huge soccer fan, so I'm not sure she made the connection that 11 is also the number of players that the soccer team has. But Peter and I are pretty sharp, and we figured it out on that one.
You knew how many players you needed, right?
Exactly. So we thought it tied nicely with our tagline, "The World's Game, Indiana's Team," And it connected those two things. So along with the actual identity, the pieces we put into the logo, the colors drawn from the Indianapolis city flag, you know, we felt as a package it made a lot of sense tying the club to the city and to the world sport. That, you know, the one constant is the 11 players on the field that represent your city in the world's game. So, you know, we were excited to put it out there, and overall we've received a tremendous response on it.
And obviously our audience cannot see this, but Peter's got a spiffy scarf with the Indy 11 logo on there. Is there, where can people buy those if they want them?
Indy11.com, though, online store is actually being upgraded in preparation for the new season right now. So it might be a couple of days till you can actually purchase. We do also have merchandise in Finish Line stores and Avon Sports and a couple other spots in the city and at our games as well coming up.
We are talking about the Indy 11 here on No Limits. My guests are Peter Wilt, team president and general manager, Tom Dunmore, VP of Marketing and Operations, and Chrissy Edgington, VP of Marketing for U.S. Sports Advisors. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the arrival of professional soccer here in Indianapolis, the arrival of the Indy 11. My guests are Peter Wilt, who is the team president and general manager, Tom Dunmore, team vice president of marketing and operations, and Chrissy Edgington, vice president of marketing for U.S. Sports Advisors. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. John, welcome to the program.
Appreciate it. Quick question just for, you know, who I guess it would be Peter would answer this. You know, originally we heard that Indy 11 would kind of be in the A-League for a year or two, and then with the plan of moving into the MLS, you know, down the road. And wondering two things. One, why was that the path, if indeed that is the path you see Indy 11 going, that you guys chose to go? And if it's not, kind of, is the A-League kind of the home you guys find yourself staying in, like the Charleston Battery and Rochester Rhino and all the success they've had? Or are you trying to take the Portland Timbers A-League to MLS path?
Thanks for the question, John.
Thank you very much.
It's actually the North American Soccer League, not the A-League, and we're not in the league with Charleston or Rochester. The North American Soccer League is the second division currently in U.S. soccer, Major League Soccer's first division. We never did say that we plan to go to Major League Soccer. I mean, that was something that I think some of the fans assumed. Certainly, we want to play at the highest level. We want to have the highest standards. We want to be a team and an organization that any league in the country or the world would love to have be a member of it. We don't have the venue that is required for Major League Soccer, so it's a moot question at this point. We need at least 18,000 seats for that. So we're very happy with the North American Soccer League. It's a very good league, and it's getting much better, both on the field and operationally. Some of the newer teams that are coming in really have share the vision that Indy 11 has of operating at first division standards. You know, sometimes I mention a better comparison than first division, second division might actually be the old ABA and NBA or AFL mm-hmm. and NFL. We do want to bring a good quality play on the field. You know, we're talking to some potential signings that any league in the world, frankly, would be proud to have a member of it. So if Major League Soccer presents itself as a real option down the road, it's our responsibility to analyze that opportunity and make the decision at that point. But now is not the time.
And Chrissy, could you walk me through it? Peter did a little bit of it, but how is professional, at least professional soccer in North America set up? I mean, there does seem to be for the casual fan, at least a profusion of teams and leagues. How do they all interconnect?
Well, I think definitely the connection point is through the fans themselves. You know, the soccer fan is an avid sports fan for the most part, and actually in studies they found that soccer, and particularly, you know, the studies based on MLS, soccer's avid fan base is the most rapidly growing avid fan base of any professional sport in the U.S. So, you know, the fact that these fans are able to kind of unite, whether it be in, you know, unifying around their own team or around a rivalry, I think it's really driven through the fans, and they're the ones who are really responsible for spreading the sport throughout the U.S.
Gotten an email question from a particularly, it sounds like, well-informed soccer fan. It's great to have a really, really smart audience. This is from Lewis, and if you would like to join the conversation by sending us an email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. He says, first, very few of us realize how lucky we are to have Peter Wilt. He is a brilliant strategist and has prophetic views. Well, I think you've got a fan there, Peter.
Hi, Mom.
With that in mind, what is the longer-term solution for soccer in Indiana? Youth organizations are consolidating and becoming enterprises in themselves, in some cases formal subsidiaries of the Chicago Fire. Is that the right answer for youth, and how does Indy 11 outplay the Chicago Fire in this longer-term strategy?
It's not a matter of competing with a soccer team in a different market. We just do the best we can, and we need to be a good partner for the community, and it will all sort itself out. The youth soccer development question that is being asked is an interesting one. Youth soccer is developed. Young players are developed in this country differently than they are in the rest of the world, where professional clubs have always been responsible for their training from a very young age. And Tom may want to talk more about this, being from England. In the United States, it's always been the volunteers or amateur coaches' responsibility for the training of the young kids. What's going on now, and the listener is referring to, is Major League Soccer is developing its own academies and taking some ownership and interest in developing the players. And that's a good thing. I mean, better instruction, more instruction, consolidation with higher quality of play will improve the player. But what's really missing is, I'll call it sandlot soccer, just playing soccer on your own. In the rest of the world, the reason Brazil is so great at soccer is because, not because it's overregulated or overcoached, it's because kids play soccer almost 24 hours a day, wherever they are, whoever they're with, whether it's on the beach or in an alley with an actual soccer ball or a bunch of rags taped together. We don't have that hunger, that mentality in this country, and that's what is needed to get to the next level. The organization of it by professional teams isn't going to hurt the sport, but it needs to be more than that. Tom, can you address
that? Tom, yeah. To speak to the difference in the soccer cultures of the United States and Great Britain.
And traditionally, in the U.S., since the youth soccer explosion, which really began in the 70s, it has been a mostly suburban sport. I mean, you have the cliche of the soccer mom with the minivan, and it can be expensive to play. That's been a huge driver of the growth of the sport, and it should never be forgotten. And what that youth soccer growth has done to allow teams like Indy 11 to exist, and our partnerships with youth clubs are going to be a tremendous area for Indy 11 to give back to those clubs and get kids the chance to come out and play and connect with our coaches. But what we don't have is the urban inner city street soccer that you see the rest of the world. As Peter said, when I was a kid in England, you know, in a city, I grew up playing with a ball that was rolled together and taped together and just kicked around on a concrete lot, you know, for hours on end. And I'm not a great soccer player, but I'm pretty sure I'd be a terrible one if I hadn't kicked that ball around so many times. And it's just that touch, you know, just as we see with basketball in the NBA, mm-hmm. most of the best players, you know, grew up playing pick up basketball mm-hmm. and just playing endlessly. And soccer needs more of that. So we're working on some initiatives to generate more soccer in urban communities. We had an initiative called Goals for Indy recently, where we partnered with an inflatable goal company called Goalrilla, based out of Evansville, and they were able to provide over 100 sets of goals that we work with to distribute to community partners across the city, from YMCAs to IPS elementary schools, just getting kids out and playing soccer. And then they don't need much equipment. They just need a ball, and in this case, an inflatable goal that pops up in 10 seconds. You don't need a manicured grass surface. You just need a basketball court or an old tennis court that can be resurfaced, which is another project we're looking at with Indy Parks and Rec. So there are lots of things we can do to connect and grow soccer at the street level, if you want to call it that, and get communities that haven't traditionally played as much soccer but can really benefit from having a simple, easy-to-play activity. It's a great after-school activity for kids at low cost for schools and community organizations. And that is a great community benefit, as well as potentially developing a future Indy 11 player or two.
We've gotten a series of tweets, enthusiastic tweets, and if you would like to join the conversation by Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. One says there are soccer fans in Indy and in America, plenty of them. It's just a matter of getting them excited about Indy 11. I know I am. High five to Peter Wilt for bringing the team here, and Ursel Ozdemir, is that how I pronounce it? Can't wait for 412. And then another one saying, definitely will be attending games. Indianapolis can continue to lead in sports world. Demographics clearly favor long-term growth of sport. We're talking, obviously, about the arrival of pro soccer and the Indy 11 here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Just wanted to kind of bounce off that last comment. Saturday mornings across from the Jordan YMCA, you can see a rabid group of soccer players out in the field. They're playing here in Indianapolis. I know there's pickups everywhere, and we're finally glad to have some representation in a national professional league as far as soccer goes, being a farm for a lot of people who went to IU. They know we've got a national representation there and reputation for being national champions. So it's great to finally have a team here in Indianapolis that we can watch and maybe farm from IU and that kind of talent. My question is about the Honda sponsorship. I've seen that we do have them on our jerseys, and I was curious to know what other details we can get related to that sponsorship, and if they have sponsored sections in the stadium, what the plans are for setting out more sponsorships to fund our team.
Thanks very much for the call, Adam.
Yeah, a couple of comments. First of all, yeah, Honda has been a great partner. We were looking for a company that represents the state, locally as well as nationally and internationally, a prominent company that we would have proud to represent us, very large on the jersey. And Honda fits that with their plant in Greensburg, and they've been terrific. At the stadium itself, you can look for Honda representation beyond the jerseys and the training gear at the interactive area that we're calling the Honda Fun Zone. Kids and families and adults alike can come early and participate in interactive games. We'll have inflatables with radar guns, skills contests. It's on the grass field in between the stadium itself and the natatorium to the east side of the stadium. We want this to be a full experience, not just the game itself. I think one of the wonderful things about soccer worldwide is the fan experience, and the fans actually help create that. Much of it with the supporters themselves, with the chants, the songs, and everything. But the Honda Fun Zone is going to be part of it before the games.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about the other part of Adam's call, too, when he talked about how the soccer is exploding on an informal basis. I'd like Chrissy and Tom to speak a little bit. I mean, it seems like the early benchmarks, if you're selling out games in your first season, and literally there, it sounds like there's not going to be a seat to be bought fairly soon. You call that a success right out of the gate. What's the potential for this market in terms of soccer? I mean, where do you see it going, Chrissy?
Well, I just want to chime in quickly on the Honda piece. We actually represent American Honda in their motorsports activation. And, of course, their kind of three brand pillars are youthful, exciting, and innovative. And those are the opportunities that they're really looking to get behind. And so it's no surprise that, you know, that the Central Indiana Honda dealers and Honda manufacturers of Indiana would get behind Indy 11 being that innovative solution for this new sport in the city. So I think that's a really great fit there, and kudos to everybody for bringing that deal together. In terms of the longevity of the sport in the city, I think this is one that we're just seeing the tip. You know, it's just starting right now. We have yet to see the masses really activate themselves within the city. And I think Indy 11 has done a really fabulous job thus far of tapping into that fan base and giving them actual ownership in this team. And so as long as fans feel a part of the action and part of the decision and, you know, part of the celebration, they'll continue to grow. And so I think really the sky's the limit.
Tom, I mean, if you're selling out at 11,000, though, and people have yet to even see the team take the field, that's got to be encouraging. I mean, are we talking, you know, in the relatively near future, a new stadium? You know, what kind of capacity? I know Peter's grimacing over here, but those are the kind of questions. If you're having that kind of success out of the gate, where could it lead to?
I think Peter may actually been grinning because, you know, I think what we have seen is such a demand that we are being pushed for the right reasons to build a bigger stadium. We helped host Chelsea versus Inter at Lucas Oil Stadium last summer on pretty short notice. It was a Thursday night game the night before school started in central Indiana, and we had over 40,000 fans there. And the average ticket price was not a cheap one. So,
what was the average ticket price?
Peter, do you know exactly?
It's over $70.
Over $70. Mm-hmm. And I've been remiss. What's the average? What are the ticket prices for an Indy 11 game?
We start at $10. You know, one of our goals was to make it accessible for all fans. So it's very important to have that entry level price that allows, you know, families and groups to come out and millennials. At the same time, we also have high-level hospitality with suites, with premium seating areas, with an exclusive hospitality area, in-seat service. So we're trying to make sure we can cater to everybody.
Yeah, I also want to point out the last caller's point. We didn't just come in here and fill a total void. Mm-hmm. There is a foundation of soccer in this state. Mm-hmm. Both from a participation level, but also the university level. Indiana University has had tremendous success over the years with Jerry Yeagley and now Todd Yeagley winning 8 championships. Notre Dame is a defending champion in this state. And there have been professional teams before that have tried this, and the timing wasn't right. So it's not like we're coming in here and building this all on our own. We're building it on the shoulders of others.
We are talking about the Indy 11. We've got a question via Twitter, and if you would like to send us a tweet, you can do so at WFYI. This one says, we have a question for Peter and Tom. Will there be vegan options at Carroll Stadium? Also, will there be ample bike parking?
Good questions. Again, not the first time.
How about good answers?
Not the first time we've heard the vegan question. And there will be vegan options at the stadium. I'm a vegetarian myself, and I'm well aware it's very important to provide for all fans. So we are finalizing our menus with our caterer pretty much as we speak. And in terms of bike parking, yes, the IUPUI campus has a good amount of bike parking, including over by the Natatorium, which is adjacent to Carroll Stadium.
And then the other tweet is, arrival of pro soccer means excitement, fun, looking forward to Indy 11, can't wait. I mean, how long, it's been a long ride for you guys. I mean, how excited are you for this first game, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, there was a period where there was so much to do. We really didn't want to have the games.
Yeah.
We wanted to put it off a little bit. But you're right. We're getting to the point now. We just want to play the games. We want to have it. It's like getting ready for Christmas and opening the present. We're focusing on making sure that fan experience is good. we have pretty good confidence that the team on the field is going to be very good. It's going to be competitive. It's going to work hard. It's going to be entertaining. We're focusing on the logistical elements to make sure the fans do have that good experience and want to come back. And there's a lot involved with that. That's traffic management. It's parking. It's making sure the restrooms are clean. There's lines are reasonable for the food and beverage. Security is fine. The PA announcers, the right level. All those things are important to making this team sustainable.
We're talking about the Indy 11 here on No Limits. My guests are Peter Wilt, Tom Dunmore, and Chrissy Edgington. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the Indy 11, the arrival of professional soccer here in central Indiana. My guests are Peter Wilt, who is the team president and general manager, Tom Dunmore, who is the team vice president of marketing and operations, and Chrissy Edgington, who is vice president of marketing for U.S. Sports Advisors. Again, we're talking about the Indy 11. Jake, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I know this was touched on briefly earlier in the program, but I did want to ask about any future stadium options that might be in the cards for Indy 11. I know there was a bid for some land by the owner, and that kind of got shot down. I was wondering, you know, what is the future beyond, you know, the temporary fix of, you know, IUPUI's stadium there?
Well, I think,
thanks very much for the call, Jake. Yes.
I think it's important that any sports team, but you know, certainly for us, it's important to play in a venue designed and built for our sport. So long term, we absolutely do need a soccer-centric stadium. And I think the other key is that it be located downtown. You know, certainly there's strengths in the suburbs for soccer, but as an entertainment venue, and not just for soccer, but for other events, it needs to be located near businesses that will benefit economically from the sports teams and other hosts of that stadium. We made the effort in the legislature this past short session, and we recognized early that there was more time was needed, frankly, for the numbers to be analyzed. We're very confident in the numbers that we've put together that this will be a self-sustaining venue that will be funded with user-generated funds. And we received input from the legislators to come back in the budget session next year. Indiana, of course, is a state with a two-year cycle, and the thought that the budget session would be more appropriate for this. And we'll use that period in between to educate the public as well as the legislators on the funding mechanisms and the reasons behind the numbers and how it will make it work.
Are there potential long-term health or injury implications for the athletes playing on
I say this as a
one-time basketball player whose knees still remind him that there was a time years ago when a lot of gyms went away from hardwood to other synthetic surfaces that were turned out to be not nearly as forgiving.
Yeah, they've improved the surfaces tremendously with synthetics over the past 10 or 15 years. The surface at Carroll is a field turf revolution field, which is the highest end, the highest quality of the synthetics. But it's still not natural. It's still not grass. It doesn't have the same give as natural grass. So the preference is for grass, but there has been a tremendous reduction in the number of injuries with the synthetic surface.
How does one go about making the Indy 11? I mean, if you want to be part of the team, is it? Is it a don't call us, we'll call you? Do you scout?
It pretty much is. We have a great network. Having Jurgen Sommer as our head coach has been fantastic, and director of soccer operations. He's so well networked, not just locally because he spent most of his life here in Indiana, but he played overseas. He was the first American goalkeeper in the English Premier League, represented the United States in the World Cup in 1994 and 1998. And so he has a lot of people coming to him. I've been in the business a couple of years, so I've got some people coming to me. And the pool of talent for the North American Soccer League is almost endless. It was important to us that we assemble the team with both Indiana players, players throughout the United States, and international players. And I think we have a good blend of that right now, and the proof will be in the pudding. We open April 12th at Carroll Stadium, 7:30, and we pretty much have a home game every other weekend. Sometimes the schedule has us with two straight home games and two straight away games. But throughout the summer until the end of October, we'll be at Carroll.
We continue to get tweets. If you'd like to join the conversation via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. This one says, definitely we'll be attending games, and it shows just how far soccer in the state has come when we can get a team of this quality. And then it says, and this is important, says, with Indy 11 in Indiana, I don't have to drive 3+ hours to Illinois or Ohio to watch professional soccer. How much of a factor was that in the timing that there were options to go see professional soccer? It's just you had to travel for them. You really had to want it if you were in central Indiana. Chrissy?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Indiana is the crossroads of America, and, you know, in some ways professional sports have expected fans to really utilize that and get on the road and either head to Columbus to see the Crew or out to Chicago to see the Fire. And I think that, you know, Indianapolis's recent, you know, ranking on America's best downtowns is a big factor of that. And Indianapolis has done a really fantastic job as a city working to draw people back downtown and give them a reason, you know, developing the cultural trail and the various cultural districts. You know, they're really working to support this demographic of people who want to stay here and who want to participate in local events. And so, you know, Indy 11 is just a really great fit into that puzzle.
Indianapolis has been a great sports market for decades and decades, going back to the U.S. Olympic Sports Festival in 82, the Pan Am Games mm-hmm. in the late 80s, and then the national governing bodies relocating here really gave Indianapolis a reputation as being a great sports city. The Super Bowl coming here, the NCAA Final Four has just added to it. The logical extension to that is world sports. And I also happen to be a big proponent of the mayor's emphasis on cricket. I think it's a good business decision. And soccer fits in that global sports direction that the city is going to.
We've also gotten a message from a listener named Kelly via Facebook. And if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits, WFYI. Says simply, the Naptown Roller Girls wish Indy 11 great success in their inaugural year. Welcome to Indianapolis. Got an email question from another one from Lewis, who says, do you see a structure similar to the English League where the bottom four MLS teams could be relegated to the NASL and the top four NASL teams could be promoted? Someone probably should explain that. Lewis clearly knows his soccer very well.
Well, I'm going to take the promotion relegation question, but I want Tom to talk about Naptown Rollers and how they're
okay.
A good fit with us. So promotion relegation is something that hardcore soccer fans in the U.S. desperately want. It does add some real interest to the end of a soccer season if your team's not doing well and is really out of the running for first place or the championship. You stay interested because you want your team staying in the major league. If you cross that over to baseball, you think about the Chicago Cubs and their century of ineptitude. They'd be in single A or lower if they were demoted every year they finished at the bottom of the league.
Or as they keep saying, the Cubs are now in their second century of rebuilding.
Indeed. Tom, you want to talk about the Naptown Rollers? It's been a great partnership of ours.
Of course. I think it's another of those tremendous community partnerships that we've just been embraced by this community. As Peter said, it's a great sports town, and the Roller Girls are awesome. If you've never been to a Roller Girl bout, please do go. Check them out. It's high octane. It's incredibly energetic and incredibly physical. They are about 20 times fitter than I can even dream of being. And we have a partnership with them. We cross promote. We'll be doing some ticket offers for their bouts, and we attend their bouts and get our players out there. So You know, we're really grateful for the support they've shown us and all the other community partners. I think we have over a dozen now who have just embraced what we're doing and are excited for something new to come to Indianapolis. So we want to make sure that we give back and support those community partners and promote them as well.
We are talking about the arrival of the Indy 11 here in central Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. John, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. How are you doing?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just wondering a couple things. One was how long is the season? And then also, if there's a postseason, would we be hosting some of that here in town?
Thanks very much for the call and the questions, John.
Yeah, that's a good question. There's actually two seasons every year. There's a spring season and then a fall season. The break between the two seasons this year occurs to overlap the World Cup. So we'll play the first season April 12th to June 7th, and then the World Cup will go about a month, and we'll start up at the end of the World Cup July 12th with the fall season, and that goes until October 31st. At the end of the season, there's the championships. The championships include four teams. It's the winners of the two seasons, the spring season and the fall season, who host the first round of the championships. And then the next two best records overall will be the other two teams in the championships. There'll be the semifinals and then the final, a single game to decide the winner.
And what happens if the same teams win in both the spring and
we hope that happens, and we hope it's us. Yeah. And then they go to the next team down.
So, okay.
An overall record.
Okay, so either way, you've got four teams that correct, play, and you have to go. And I probably should ask, how many teams are there in the league?
There are 10 teams in the league this year, which has increased. There's two expansion teams this year, Ottawa and Indianapolis. It was eight last year. The New York Cosmos actually joined last year. And then next year there's going to be three more teams. So the league continues to expand westwardly. There's teams in Canada as well as Ottawa. There's Edmonton. And in Florida, there's Tampa and Fort Lauderdale with Jacksonville coming in next season.
We've gotten, a tweet from a listener named Eric who says that he's very excited that professional soccer has returned to Indy, already way beyond what the Blast were able to do. And then, you know, this part, Chrissy, I'd like you to respond to. This is from a listener named Rachel. A tweet says, I will attend. To me, professional soccer means we really belong to the global community. What does this say about the fact that there is now professional soccer in Indianapolis? What does it say about where the city is and the market is to some degree?
Well, it's interesting when you think about it. Soccer is really the only top-tier sport that wasn't born and raised in America, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the fact that it's taken us a couple decades to adopt it and really start to embrace it is not necessarily surprising, but it is exciting that we're there now. And again, you know, this millennial generation is one that's really looking for multicultural experiences. We see it in the food scene. We see it in, you know, spirits and alcohol. We see it in sports now, too. So I think that and the social network is a big piece of that, too. You know, that now we're sitting here in Indianapolis, but somebody in Indonesia could listen to what we're saying. And so the ability to connect these international cultures, you know, has really started to evolve what that generation, what that demographic is looking for. And so soccer is, I think, the connection between those two.
We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Says, are there possibilities for an all-women's team or co-ed? What about bringing a women's team to Indy?
Absolutely. I'm very proud that among the other teams I've started, one of is the professional women's team in Chicago, the Chicago Red Stars in the National Women's Soccer League. And bringing a professional women's team to Indianapolis is absolutely on our radar. We want to get Indy 11 launched first and you do one thing at a time right. But I think there's a very strong possibility that we will have a women's team. And if we get the new stadium I would say it's a virtual lock that there would be pro women's soccer as well.
Right.
And remember, when in 1999, when the Women's World Cup was here in the United States, that was arguably the most popular sporting event in this country's history.
In terms of the stadium, I mean, have you started looking at locations, or has it moved that far? I mean, where would we be looking at doing this?
Yeah, again, with the stadium, the location is just downtown. You know, several sites certainly would be considered, but it's premature to select a particular one at this point.
And then we've gotten also a tweet from a listener who says he's a season ticket holder here, very excited for it and looking forward to it bringing a unique fan experience to Indy. And I didn't add, we talked about other ticket prices. How much is, if you do want to be a season ticket holder, Tom, how much does that cost, and are there still season tickets available?
Well, we are at the 7,000 limit of season tickets. We do have spots opening up now and then, so call the office is actually your best bet there. And the season tickets start at $135 for a 15-game package, so it works out at less than $10 a game for season ticket holders.
So, and you probably ought to give them, we've just told them to call the office. Could you give them
sure.
the phone number again
that,
real
that would
quick?
Be helpful.
That would be.
The office number is 317-685-1100.
What's going to be the best moment, you think, at the first game here? I mean, Peter, what are you looking forward to the most? I'm going to give everybody, since you've all invested a tremendous amount in this, what's going to be the best moment?
I'm really looking forward to hearing the Brickyard Battalion sing and chant and create an atmosphere that I don't know Hoosiers have ever heard before.
Tom.
I was going to say a similar thing, but for me, it's also just going to be seeing the team take the field. You know, Peter and I have been working on this project for a long time, and others have been working on it longer, the Brickyard Battalion included. And I think their joy when they see the team start kicking a ball and representing Indianapolis in professional soccer is just going to be an incredible moment for everybody.
Chrissy.
Absolutely agree with both those responses. I think that I'll take it one step further is the first Indy 11 goal. You know, that soccer celebrations of goals scored is by far the most extreme celebration of any sport. You know, it's just invigorating to watch that. So I think that the energy will just explode with the first goal.
And if, again, Tom, real quickly, if people do want to attend and there are only just a handful of tickets left, could you give them the URL and a way to buy tickets?
Absolutely. Indy11.com, and that's 11 spelled out, or call us at 317-685-1100. Reach us via Twitter at Indy11, Facebook Indy11. We're pretty accessible, and we'll help you get yourself and your group, your youth soccer team out to a game.
What do you plan to do after the game? How do you guys plan to celebrate? I mean, this has been a long, long push, I can tell from the way you've talked, to get us to this point, Peter.
A couple of things. One, for me, the real celebration will be after the second game because we have another home game on April 19th.
Okay.
So it's going to be gear up, get ready for the 19th. I think on the 20th I might be able to exhale a little bit. Mm-hmm. But on the night of the 12th after that, there really is a lot of logistical work to do. We have to take down some of the barricades, roll up some of the carpeting that covers the track. There'll be a little post-game party and a beer garden on that field to the east. And then about 2 hours after the game, I'll actually watch the game on television. Our partners at MyIndy 23 will not only show all the home games live, but they'll rebroadcast them early in the morning, the night of the game. And during the games, I'm usually a little occupied, so I don't get to watch the game too much.
Yeah.
So somewhere around 1 in the morning, I'll be at home watching the game on television.
And that will have to be the last word. I wish you all the best of luck, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We've been talking about the Indy 11 here. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.